Faith Middleton, thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. The Faith Middleton Show is on the road again, this time to a place of many undersea marvels, Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut. You too could see whales leaping. Trainers are about to explain how they get the animals to perform. Researchers study the animals here and in our vast oceans for better understanding of their world and ours. Producers Lori Mack, Jonathan McNichol, and I invite you to come with us now to Mystic Aquarium to learn about the amazing lives of these whales, whiskered seals, and so many more underwater creatures, known and unknown, to appreciate how trainers bond and care for them. This is a place that is teaching hundreds of thousands of school children and adults why sea life matters. What a fun way to discover and learn. We're with trainer Jen Rigo, who works with the sea lions and seals. Describe for our listeners the typical sea lion. They have these whiskers.
Mm-hmm. Depending on the animal, some animals have longer vibrissae than others. You can see Coco sitting right up there on stage. He has fairly long whiskers. Some of the other animals, Surfer, who's our teenager who's coming up right now, his are a little bit shorter. So they have those vibrissae or those whiskers, much like you'd see a cat or dog having. And they use them for a lot of the same purposes that cats or dogs do, to kind of feel around. When they're hunting out in the wild, they'd be hunting in dark, murky water. So they're using those vibrissae to find fish and to find their way around.
Is she feeding him?
She is.
She's throwing it in the air and he catches it.
Oh, yes. They're very good at catching the fish. They make us look good when we toss it.
Wow. And now here's the big guy getting his food. She doesn't toss his.
Right now, actually, what she's doing, she's not feeding him. She's giving him eye drops. Since Coco is our oldest male, he's 24 years old. And just like with people, sometimes sea lions start to have some health issues as they get older. He's starting to have some eye issues. So he's on four different eye drops that he gets three times a day.
Wait a minute.
So we've trained him to allow us to give him eye drops, and now she's feeding him for it because he did a great job.
But the size of his fish compared to the teenager's fish is a big difference.
He gets a lot more than Surfer does.
So they have two flippers that they use to sit up on.
Yep, they have their two front flippers, and this is actually one of the... A lot of people think that seals and sea lions are actually the same animals, but they're very different. And their front flippers is one of the easiest ways to tell them apart. If you look at Surfer over there, he's easily holding up his body weight on those front flippers and able to sit upright. And they have really big, strong front flippers that they use for swimming and also climbing around on rocks. Uh-huh. And if you were to look at a seal, they don't have the ability to support their body weight. Their front flippers are much shorter than a sea lion's.
Okay. All the trainers are out on the platform.
Yep.
One, two, three. I see three or four people.
Yep, there's three trainers out there and four sea lions. This is our training session. So what we're doing on this morning, this is the first session that we have with the sea lions. So you notice when Christina was out there with Coco and Surfer, she was asking him to show her his flipper and looking in his eye, looking at his mouth. The first thing that we do in the morning is we just do an overall kind of body check and make sure that everybody's doing fine. Sometimes, especially the little ones, will kind of play rough overnight. We want to make sure that nobody has any cuts or scrapes,
so
that we need any attention.
She just said, "Show me your flipper," and he held his flippers up one at a time, and she was checking to see if they were okay.
Yep. So they have different cues. They have verbal cues, and you'll see us giving some hand signals that they've been trained to understand to ask for various parts of their body or different behaviors.
Wow. So you hear their barking? So they have that low dog bark sound.
It's very similar to a dog bark, and that's where they kind of got a lot of their nicknames. But they actually do make a couple of different vocalizations. So they have that kind of very characteristic bark that you'll hear. They also can make a roar, which is kind of more of a low, almost lion-like sounding vocalization. Surfer's definitely our most vocal. He's kind of his own cheerleader. You'll see anytime he does something correctly, he barks all the way back to his seat. So he's very proud of himself.
Now, she held her two hands about 6-8 inches apart and aimed them parallel to each other and aim those hands at that seal. And what was that command?
This is actually a new behavior that Deb's working on with Jetty, who's our youngest sea lion, and she's training him to do what we call a rafting behavior, and that's a behavior that you would see sea lions naturally do in the wild, but we're trying to train him to do it on SD or on Q so that we can talk about it with the public and educate people about some of the different natural behaviors that you'll see sea lions doing. So what she's doing is she's asking him to raise both a hind flipper and a front flipper. And what they'll do naturally in the wild is when they're out kind of basking in the water, they'll use that ability to raise their flippers out of the water to help thermoregulate.
Can we go around to the other side to get near the barking one?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Jen Rigo is the chief trainer for all of this. Okay, she's opening the gate. Literally, we're 4 or 5 feet. Oh, he's right here in front of us.
So this is Boomerang.
Hi, Boomerang.
So he's kind of our troublemaker, too, sometimes, because he's four and he's a boy, so just like any other four-year-old
boy.
He's
1 foot away from us.
So some of those vocalizations that you're talking about, one of the ones that you're hearing and that most people think of when they think of sea lions is the bark. Good. And as you can imagine, that can get pretty loud. And when there's four of them doing that, that can get very loud.
Oh
but they
God.
Also have a couple of different vocalizations that they can make. That's more of that kind
you're
of
you're just doing different hand signals.
Yep, so they know that different hand signals mean different different behaviors, and he thought I just gave him their one, but I didn't.
So they're He's very so intelligent. Beautiful. They're very intelligent?
They are extremely intelligent animals.
He has ears.
They do. Sea lions,
little
unlike
ears.
Seals, have external ear flaps, so you can see these little external ear pinnae.
On a boat in Cape Cod where all the seals and sea lions mm-hmm. are, they told us to keep our fingers away from the water because they can actually take off a finger. How is he letting you get so close to his mouth?
I've worked with him for about 3.5 years now, so I've spent a long time building a trusting relationship with him. And when he first got here, I definitely would not just go up to him and touch him like this. Absolutely not. He trusts me and he knows I'm not going to hurt him.
And you're going to feed him.
Exactly. So I've become a pretty positive thing for him. Wild animals, you'll see sometimes our younger animals, we don't jump right into that. It takes a while to build up to that. Just like people, just like dogs, like cats, they all have their own personality. So you can see Boomerang is pretty comfortable out here. He's kind of just doing his own thing and hanging out. So Surfer's next. He's our teenager. He's the one that's on the island right now. Surfer's a little bit more of a nervous animal. So you'll see him come out here and his eyes will be kind of big.
Okay.
Good, stage.
Here he goes. While we wait for Surfer, conversation with Janelle Hsu. She handles the rescue and rehabilitation of animals like Surfer stranded in the wild.
Yeah, we respond to any marine mammal, so your seals, dolphins, porpoises, whales, or sea turtles, and we respond to both live or dead animals.
And do you bring the live animals here to rehabilitate them, and do you sometimes keep them, or do they go back into the wild? How does it work?
Yeah, we have what's called the Seal Rescue Clinic, and it's here at the aquarium, and that's where we do all of our rehabilitation.
What's the most common injury for the seals, let's say?
We see a lot of malnourishment and dehydration. There are those occasions where we'll see human interaction, which is your fishing gear, boat strikes, things like that. Oh. But they're a lot less common in our coverage area, so we respond to Connecticut and Rhode Island.
Do you do surgery here for them?
Yeah, we will do surgeries. We see a particular seal called a harp seal, and we see those in kind of end of January through the month of March. And those are what are called ice seals. So they breed on floes of ice up farther north. But during the months that we see them down here, they're kind of migrating south. And those particular animals will eat rocks and sand on the beach. There's a lot of theories behind why they do that. But, of course, once they do that, their stomachs get impacted. And we have done some successful surgeries in the past for those animals to remove the impaction.
Is there a theory that there's some kind of mineral that they want?
Not necessarily. I think some of the theories are that they maybe recognize that they're dehydrated. They naturally eat snow and ice up north, so that when they get on our beaches, maybe they can't make that distinction.
You also mentioned that you go out on calls for dead animals. Why?
You can gather a lot of really good information from dead animals if they're what we call fresh dead, as in it looks like the animal just recently died. We can bring those animals back to the aquarium and conduct what's called a necropsy. So an autopsy is for people and necropsy is for animals. And during that necropsy, we can try to figure out cause of death. We can look for any potential infection infectious diseases that might be going on in the wild populations.
How often do you get called out? Are you like a regular physician on call? Are you called? Yeah. Are you on a beeper?
We are. We carry a stranding cell phone with us 24 hours a day, every day of the week, every day of the year, and we're basically on call all the time.
What is your most lasting relationship?
Yeah. Well, actually, I am married, so and hopefully that will last.
Yeah. So you get interrupted in the middle of anything, right?
Absolutely.
Parties.
Absolutely.
Sleep. Because the ocean is still so unknowable, do you feel partly like a pioneer?
Oh, absolutely. I think stranding in and of itself is a great way for people to study and look at ocean health. I think you can learn so much from your dead animals, you can learn so much from your rehab animals, that it's a really good sightline into the health of the oceans, absolutely.
Janelle Hsu, Stranding Coordinator at Mystic Aquarium. We go back to the sea lions. Trainer Jen Rigo just opened the gate, and here comes Surfer. Hello, big guy.
Good. So this is Surfer.
Surfer is gorgeous.
He weighs over 400 pounds right now, and he's a very handsome
pounds.
Sea lion.
You know what? If you could have a beauty contest for a sea lion, this is the
he's
one.
He's a very handsome boy.
So wow.
Those vocalizations that we were talking about, all sea lions can make those, but they sound a little bit different. It's just like if you have two dogs, you can kind of tell who's barking. Same thing with a sea lion. So Surfer's bark you're going to hear is a little bit different than a boomerang. Good. And he also does kind of a more roar type vocalization. Good. So he's doing a great job. We'll send him back, and then we'll bring Coco out.
Okay. Wow. Bye. But there he goes, into the pool. And now the giant one is coming. What is it, 400 or 600 pounds for Coco?
Coco is almost 900.
900.
He'll actually put on a little bit more weight before summer. The reason that he's so much bigger than Surfer, they're both adult males, they're both full grown. But Surfer is neutered and Coco is not. So normally what male sea lions will do in the wild is they'll spend pretty much all year from about October through the end of May eating and eating and eating and just packing on the weight. And then come summertime, they'll haul out on a beach and they'll stake out a breeding territory and they'll defend that territory and the females within that territory for about 3 to 3.5 months. And they won't go back into the water to eat. They'll just simply live off of the fat reserves that they've built up for the rest of the year. So even though
like
we don't
bears.
Have...
Exactly, like bears.
Exactly. So that's their breeding time. They don't hibernate, but they kind of go through that same kind of bulk up and then don't eat for a couple of months.
Wow.
And even though he doesn't have a territory here and he doesn't have any females, he still goes through all those hormonal changes. So right now he's kind of wrapping up his packing on the weight, and sometimes he gets up over 1,000 pounds. And then usually in the summer he's kind of checks out and he's like, thanks but no thanks, I don't really want to eat, I'm not that hungry.
Really?
So he pretty much swims around the pool for most of the summer.
He is a big boy. Well, what's a ton? How many pounds are in a ton? So 2,000? Yeah, so he's half a ton. It's unbelievable. Okay,
yeah. So
we're ready when you're ready for a Coco. Oh, you're getting your food out of the cooler. Yeah, I bet. She's opening the gate. Here comes Coco. The trainer on the other side sent him over. Here he comes. Whoa.
Good.
Ooh, he's got some teeth.
So again, he has a lot of those same vocalizations that the other sea lions have.
It's hard to believe it's
sound
fur.
A little bit different.
Oh, you're going to hear do the vocalizations?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
He has, it's kind of like a big, wet, hairy dog.
Mm-hmm.
So they have some pretty dense fur. Good. So you can imagine
he
if you
is
had a
12
beach
inches away
making a lot of noise like that defending their territories, it gets really, really loud. You can imagine it'd be pretty hard if he didn't want to show me the underneath side of his flipper. If I wanted to check it, it'd be really hard to check it out. So you make sure that everything that they do is all voluntary and that they're helping out. So they're essentially helping us with their own health care.
Do you brush his teeth?
Mm-hmm. We do.
With toothpaste?
We have a special toothpaste that we get from our veterinarian, which is much similar to what you might get if you're for your dog or your cat.
Who makes toothpaste for sea lions?
Well, you know you can get the fish-flavored ones for your dog or your cat.
Yeah.
Same thing for the sea lions. Bark.
Okay, he doesn't want to bark. It's all right.
When you're 900 pounds, you can pretty much do whatever you want.
Yep, you can do what you want.
And you can see also, you notice this kind of bump right here in the middle of his forehead.
Yeah.
That the other sea lions didn't have.
Right.
Adult intact males will get what they call a sagittal crest. And that's actually calcification in their skull, and that's kind of one of the distinguishing characteristics of an adult male.
You know, you just put a giant fish in his mouth. He doesn't chew. He swallows.
They don't chew their fish. They swallow all of their fish whole. And it's part of their hunting tactic, because if they're out in the wild and they're swimming into a school of fish, if they took the time to chew every fish, all the rest of the fish would swim away. So it allows them to eat more fish in a shorter period of time if it's just down the hatch.
Fascinating.
So he's doing a great job, so we're going to go ahead and send him back.
How old is Coco, the 900 pounds?
Coco is 24 years old.
Jen, how did you learn to do this, to work with these animals this way?
A lot of it is kind of on-the-job training. There aren't really that many schools that specialize in giving you an education to be a marine mammal trainer. A lot of times, if you're looking to get into the field, it definitely helps to have a degree because it's really competitive. So I have a degree in animal science and a degree in ecology and evolutionary biology. But a lot of it is doing internships and volunteering and kind of getting your foot in the door and seeing how it all works.
The first time that you had to stand in front of 900-pound Coco, for instance, because that's the most intimidating one, honestly, were you a little nervous?
You definitely have a healthy respect for the animals, and you have to. Everybody sees us work with them, and they're like, oh, they're like giant dogs, but they're not. They're still wild animals, and as the saying goes, anything with teeth can bite, and you have to respect that. And when you're working with them, you can see when Coco did something wrong, I didn't yell at him or get mad at him or try to, you know, be mean to him in any way. All of the training that we do is all based on positive reinforcement. Mm-hmm. So that means that when the animals do something right, we reward it, and when they do something that we would rather they not do, we ignore it. And eventually they find out it's more worth my while to do behavior A that I got a whole bunch of fish for than behavior B that I got nothing for. Mm-hmm. So that kind of helps us build our relationship with them and helps them kind of understand what we're looking for from them. And it also makes training and interacting with us positive because, like I said, Coco weighs 900 pounds. If there's something that I want him to do that he doesn't want to do, it's not going to happen. So I have to make him want to work with me. So it's all about building that positive relationship and making sure that the animals enjoy working with you and showing up to sessions.
Does Coco know you?
Absolutely.
As opposed to the other trainers?
Mm-hmm.
He can distinguish faces.
Yeah, he can distinguish individual trainers. And we'll see that a lot of times when we train new behaviors. One trainer will train the new behavior, and then once it's finished, they'll pass it off to the other trainers. So a lot of times when you're working on something new, Coco or the animal will see that trainer and they'll immediately start doing that behavior. And they're like, oh, I know, this means that we're doing this now. I know who you and I know what we're working on. So they definitely distinguish each trainer and they have a different relationship with each one of the trainers.
We're with trainer Jen Rigo, who works with the sea lions and seals. She's been so generous here at Mystic Aquarium. The Faith Middleton Show is on the road again. We're going to take a quick break, because we're going next, and we can't wait for this, to see the penguins. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with the Faith Middleton Show on the road. I'm Faith Middleton. You'll hear a different sound now. We just sanitized ourselves, feet and hands, to come into this penguin room. The producers and I are on the road at the terrific Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut, taking you with us to explore the fascinating lives of whales and penguins and sharks and seals and just the many wonders of the undersea world. How often are we able to give you this kind of up-close and personal experience? And I do encourage you to go to WNPR.org to see Kyon Wolf's pictures, because she's following us on every step. I'm here with the producers Laurie Mack and Jonathan McNichol. We have Laurie's daughter, Maria Mack, here. She's having an out-of-school experience today, because who gets to do something like this? It's a real education for everybody. This is Sarah Dunn. We've all taken our places on these little benches on the floor, and she is senior trainer of the penguins. There's one. She's just come into the room with it. So, Sarah, the penguin, who is this?
This is one of our African penguins. We have 30 African penguins in our colony. We do identify them by bracelets they wear on their right wings. So his name is Gray Brown, which coordinates with the colors he has on his bracelet. And they wear 5 beads. The bead towards the front is always pink, blue, or white, and that is a gender bead. Just by looking at our penguins, you can't tell males from females. There's no gender specifics externally. So we have to wait for them them to be old enough, about 6 months old, and we do a DNA test. Once we find out if they're male or female, we put blue for a boy and pink for a girl. Right now, we do have two penguins in our colony that are juveniles, recently updated to juvenile from chick. They were hatched in January and February and just made their way out onto the exhibit for a swim for the first time. So they are about 3 months old, and we don't know if they're male or female yet. So they are the only two that have white beads on the front. Many of our penguins were hatched here at the Mystic Aquarium. We also have some that came from other zoos and aquariums on breeding loans, and some that were hatched here at Mystic Aquarium have gone out to other facilities for breeding, and that's part of the species survival plan.
Can you tell me about the webbed feet?
It just helps them climb. They have little nails on their feet as well. They don't use their feet to swim, though, just their wings.
So he's right now standing just, I don't know, 2 feet from us, looking around. I think he's getting the lay of the land.
They are covered with feathers on their body. Some people mistake when they see them wet and slick, think they have skin like a dolphin or a whale does, but they are covered in feathers. They're very densely packed. Feathers are extremely important to their survival. They need insulation in the water. The water they swim in is fairly cold. It comes up from Antarctica. They are warm-blooded animals. They also have an oil coat. They have an oil gland at the base of their tail, so they use their beaks then to spread that oil over their feathers.
The difference between this penguin on land and its grace in the water is remarkable.
They do appear a little bit clumsier on land and more graceful in the water. African penguins are also very territorial animals. They do nest, so they like space from each other, whereas a lot of people are more familiar with the cold weather species of penguins because a lot of media programs and films have focused on that. They huddle together for body warmth, so you see them very close together. But these guys like their space from each other.
Jonathan, you want to reach out and touch him, and I'll hold the mic to tell us what he feels like?
It's almost like skin. It's almost leathery even, actually.
Is that the oil on the skin?
Probably, yeah. They mold their feathers in spring and summertime. So we're heading into June is when most of our penguins molt their feathers. So they do start to feel a little more coarse.
Ah, yes, it's oily. I'm going to touch his flipper. It's much harder. It's almost bony. There's a little bit of a callus where the heel, we'd call it the heel. He has three toes, and they're very soft, much softer than I would have imagined.
Can I ask one question? His eyes, he's got like a...
It's called a nictitating membrane. They don't have eyelids like we do, so they have that third membrane there that just blinks forward and back, and that keeps the eye moist, clean,
like,
and
when perpendicular to
yep, them. Comes from the front to the back.
So it's like a windshield wiper, in a
kind
way.
Kind of. Okay. When they're in the water as well, it's salt water that can dry your eyes out. That will stay over the eyes while they're swimming in the ocean.
Sarah, does he know you?
Definitely, yes. We have 6 full-time trainers that work with our penguins. Each trainer has a different relationship with each one of the 30 birds.
In the movie about the penguins, they have a kind of swaggering confidence. I know it's another kind of penguin. This one has almost a tenderness in terms of his personality, the way he looks, his head around his eyes. What am I seeing?
You're probably seeing his comfort level being in this room and doing these types of programs and the trust that's between me and him coming down into this room and being surrounded by people he doesn't know. If we all were up on the exhibit in near his territory, you'd see a very different posturing. You'd see a very aggressive bird defending his territory.
What does he eat?
They eat fish. We offer them herring, capelin, and squid. I brought some with me to show you. And we can offer him some food. I have a little ice on it to keep it cool. Herring is a little bit larger fish.
That's a huge fish.
They can eat fairly large fish for their body size.
She's putting the whole fish is going down his gullet. Okay, he just swallowed an entire giant fish that was about 8 inches long. Now, how long will that last him? How many of those can he eat?
Some of the birds will eat 4 to 5 of those in a feeding. It depends on their preferences. Some eat capelin, which is a smaller fish. They can eat as many as 15 to 25 in a feeding.
Really?
It just depends on the bird and it depends on the time of year as well. When they molt those feathers, they lose their waterproofing, so that means they can no longer go in the water to get food. So instinctively, they will bulk up and prepare to molt, doubling, well, about gaining an additional 40 to 60% of their body weight, which almost in turn doubles the amount of fish that they eat. So they'll bulk up, gain that weight, and then they'll rely on those energy stores through the 2-week molting process.
He's amazing. He's just a beautiful little guy.
Can you tell me again where he's from, what part of the world, and how did you get him?
These are African penguins, so they are native to South Africa, some of the islands off the coast of Africa. Our exhibit here opened in 1989, and we received about 14 African penguins from the Baltimore Zoo. All of our penguins have been raised or hatched in a zoo or aquarium, and we are part of the Species Survival Plan, which ensures breeding and genetic variability continuing on with African penguins in zoos and aquariums.
What was the ramp up in terms of training and knowledge and understanding them? How long did that take you? Is it an ongoing thing where you never learn all of it?
It's ongoing because it's not a black and white science. It's behavioral observation and kind of learning each individual bird and learn as you go. When you put in a lot of effort to one particular bird, they may be chasing you off the exhibit. They're very aggressive towards you, and you spend as much time as you can on the exhibit just being an element of the exhibit and get them to understand that you're not a threat to them, that they can ignore you and I'll ignore you and we'll be in peace with each other. And you do that for a while, and all of a sudden they come up to you and they take an interest in you, and then they hop in your lap, and then eventually they actually let you touch them. So it just seems like it happens one day. You feel like you've been doing it forever and trying to make a breakthrough with a particular bird, and then all of a sudden one day they just hop in your lap and you're like, oh, I didn't realize I had made success with this. So
I'm Faith Middleton. The producers, Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, are on the road at the terrific Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut, and we're talking with Sarah Dunn, who is senior trainer of penguins. And we have a penguin right here in this small, special demonstration room. We've been given permission to come in here. And, you know, he's 6 inches away. He's got that black and white tuxedo look. He, as you heard, he's from South Africa. He's got webbed, soft feet. He's cleaning himself right now. He just swallowed a giant fish whole right down his gullet, which is something to see. But we're here at Mystic Aquarium taking you with us to explore the fascinating lives of whales and penguins and sharks and the many wonders of the undersea world. Again, I encourage you to see Kyone Wolf's pictures of the Faith Middleton Show's latest on-the-road experience at WNPR.org, search word faith. In fact, you can do that now while the show is airing and see just what we have done.
I have one more thing I would like to share with you that you might be interested in.
Okay.
African penguins aren't always very vocal, depending on when you are around the exhibit, or other times they're very vocal. So I wanted you to be able to hear what they sound like. So in our programs, we play a recording. So if you're interested.
Okay. That's wow. That was just one, or was that a bunch?
There was a couple going. I have a couple different versions. I'll play a couple. Sometimes Gray Brown will start to vocalize when he hears. That's what African penguins sound like. All they right. sound like donkeys.
That's amazing. So that was our little guy right here in the room vocalizing in response to what he heard on the tape recorder. So that last one you heard was the real thing. That's amazing. You know, when you first started playing that, his head whipped around, you know, because he said, I know that sound. I think we insulted him. Is that
the... I think he's happy on a talk show.
Sarah Dunn, senior trainer of penguins, and her friend Gray Brown. Next, on to the Vice President of Education and Conservation Programs, Kelly Mattis. Mystic Aquarium has the only licensed aquarium preschool in the United States. How can we not talk about that?
Starting in September is our next school year. We actually just started reservations, and a few of our sessions are already sold out, so it's important to get on it right now, but it's called Sea School, which we think is cute.
And how much is traditional preschool and how much involves marine life?
You know what? We involve the traditional preschool aspects, like maybe math or reading or letters, along with the marine science. So they still do the days of the week and they learn traditional preschool topics, but they're learning it in just an absolutely fun and inventive environment.
So you have these summer camps. It means that children of various ages can come here and experience some of the things that we've been sharing with our listeners.
Absolutely. We have camps during the summer for ages 3 to 17. So everything from those preschoolers who involved, you know, in our preschool program, all the way through 17-year-olds who really want to make a career out of marine biology can have a fascinating summer experience here.
Are they shadowing your professionals here?
With especially those older camps, they get to tour behind the scenes. They get to meet the animals close up. They get to meet individuals who work in this field every day. Even the 3 to 5-year-olds get to interact with just fascinating individuals who work at the aquarium and learn an absolute ton all about the animals and environments.
When is sign up for the summer camps?
Everything's open right now at mysticaquarium.org, and all of our programs are listed under Fun and Learning, and you can sign up and see the dates and everything for all of our summer camps right now.
Kelly Mattis, Vice President of Education and Public Conservation Programs. The Faith Middleton Show is on the road at Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut. Quick break and then the whales. Don't go away.
Remember always in life. No use crying forever, because there's
too many fish in the sea. Too many fish in the sea.
I said there's short ones,
tall ones, fine ones,
kind ones.
Too many fish in the sea.
I'm Faith Middleton. The producers, Lori Mack and Jonathan McNichol, are here. And we are on the road at Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut, taking you with us to explore the fascinating lives of whales, penguins, sharks, seals, sea lions, all the wonders of the undersea world. And you can see photographs of this whole experience even as you're listening to the show, but at any time. These are pictures by Kyone Wolf of WNPR, all about our latest on-the-road experience here at Mystic. Just go to WNPR.org, search word FAITH, F-A-I-T-H. Lindsay Pollard is the trainer of the beluga whales, and we're looking at them right now. What are we going to see? What are you going to do?
We have a couple of ways where we call what's called a start of session. So we give them either one long whistle or three short whistle bursts. So when they hear those whistles being blown, they know to come over to the trainers where they are out on the exhibit, and then we start our session. Would you guys like to kneel down with me?
We're going to kneel down on the mats with Lindsay, okay?
So this is Niku.
Hi, Niku.
So I'm going to have her lay out so you can really see how long she is. And you can also notice she's light gray in color. When a beluga whale is born, they are born a dark gray in color, and then they lighten with age. So they can still maintain some of that gray coloration as Niku has, or they can go all the way to a pure white. And this is really important for their camouflage up in the Arctic. She might splash you a bit. And she's a very vocal whale.
There go my good genes.
Would you like to see what she feels like?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh. So what I'm going to have you do is actually touch right here on top of her head.
Okay, I'm touching the top of her head. Hi, sweet Niku.
And that is called her melon. The melon, if you give it a little squeeze there, it's made out of fat and muscle. So that's really important for their echolocation ability.
Wow.
So when they're echolocating, they actually send out some clicks from their blowhole right here. Sound like this.
She's doing that because you tickled her?
Yeah, so this hand signal means for that vocalization.
She's 6 inches away from us.
So when they're echolocating, they send out those clicks from that blowhole. Since this melon is made out of fat and muscle, it's a great sound conductor, so she can easily direct where that beam of sound is going into her environment.
Yeah, but
so it's
Lindsay,
just like sonar.
The fish is the size of a bass that you just put down.
Yeah, well, we have small fish called capelin. This large fish here, this is called a herring. And we also have some delicious squid here.
Oh, wow. I'd like to eat that myself.
So beluga whales, they actually have the ability to eat large amounts of fish down in one gulp. They don't have a gag reflex, so it's easy for them to swallow, and they don't chew anything, even though she does have a mouthful of teeth, as you can see.
Yeah.
But they are very dull. Yeah. Their teeth are just for grasping, killing their prey, and then they'll swallow everything whole. So their teeth naturally wear down with age.
But why do you put your hand in her mouth and smack her tongue or inside her mouth
well,
like that.
This is
she
called,
likes that.
Yeah, this is called a tongue rub. So this is something that we've conditioned. So all of our training is called positive reinforcement. When they do a behavior correctly, they get something as a reward. So we can reward them with fish, or we can reward them with what are called secondary reinforcers. And one of those is a tongue rub. So we just put our hand right in there and pat her on her tongue.
Is she standing on her tail to stand up like this?
No,
or is she
she's just
using her flippers.
She's using her tail to definitely sit upright like that, but she is not touching the bottom at all.
Okay.
I'll have her show you her tail a little bit better.
Okay. Oh, look at you. So you just gave her a signal, and now she's going away from us.
Yeah, they're all
showing the tail.
How we communicate to our belugas is all through hand signals.
Oh, she's sticking her tail right up in the air. Like that.
This whistle tells her she did the behavior correctly, and she can come back for her reward.
She has a very rounded head, and it looks like she's smiling all the time. And so you get a sense of how adorable she is. But yet, I think to myself, they can be ferocious, can't they?
No, beluga whales are very docile.
Even in the sea?
Yeah, they'd swim away faster than you could even approach them up in the Arctic. So they don't have that instinct to be ferocious. They're very docile. They're very social animals. So
they're like dolphins, and they look like dolphins.
They're very similar. A beluga whale is considered a toothed whale because they have teeth in their mouth, and a dolphin is also considered a toothed whale. So even though the dolphin has the name of a dolphin, it's in the whale family.
Mm-hmm.
Beluga whales, they have a lot of muscles in their face, so that's why they always look like they're smiling. And on their body, they have a lot of blubber. So 40% of their body weight is blubber. So underneath their really thick skin, they have about 4 to 6 inches of blubber. And that's really important for keeping them warm.
In terms of personalities, how do they differ? How would you describe what that is? Some more playful, some more shy? Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, they're all very social in nature anyway. But Juno, our youngest male, he's only 8 years old. He's very curious. He's very energetic, just like an 8-year-old would be. So he's just kind of very playful. Naku, the whale you met today, she's very easygoing. She's probably the most easy out of the whales to get used to the new faces around. So she's very easygoing. And then Kila, our other female, she's just a very vocal whale. So as you're feeding her throughout the day, she's just always vocalizing. So they all have really fun personalities, and they're just all so fun to work with.
Lindsay says whales can be extremely vocal. She's going to try to get Niku to vocalize right after a quick conversation with Tracy Spoon, a research scientist at the aquarium and at sea. The question is, when a research scientist is at sea, what do you study?
Well, one of our main projects in the wild is to look at the health of beluga whales. So we currently have 2 health assessment projects going on 2 populations of beluga whales in Alaska. And part of the health assessment is to look at how well their immune systems are functioning. So that's one of our overarching research goals here, is to understand the immune systems of marine mammals. Because the immune system is an animal's defense against disease and against pathogens, and it's absolutely critical for maintaining health.
So this is just like human beings?
Absolutely. So that's one of the things that is assessed in you when you go to a doctor, is how well your immune system is functioning. And we do the same thing for both belugas in the wild and the belugas here at the aquarium.
I noticed that every single place we go here at Mystic Aquarium, the trainers are asking the animals to do certain behaviors so that they can check the health of them. Does this connect to what you do when you're looking at these animals out in the wild?
Oh, it absolutely does. So our animals here are so well trained in what are called husbandry behaviors, where upon signal, for instance, our beluga whales present their flukes, and we can get a blood sample. And this blood sample is not only used for our routine veterinary checkups like chemistries and CBCs that, for instance, you would have done when you go to a doctor's office, but then we can also use that blood to develop the assays and the protocols that we then apply to our population studies of the wild belugas and understanding them.
So they're giving you a baseline.
Absolutely. They're not only giving us a baseline, they're actually allowing us to develop and optimize these tests that we then can also use on the wild belugas. So they truly are helping their wild counterparts and allowing us to better understand the health of their wild counterparts and what may be threatening their conservation and their survival.
Now, what is climate? Do you believe in climate change?
Oh, absolutely.
When you go out to do research, how far do you go? How far out?
So the two field sites that we have right now for studying belugas, one is in the Arctic Circle at a place called Point Lay, Alaska. So it's one of the farthest points north in Alaska that you can actually go. And Dr. Tracy Romano has been doing research there in collaboration with other organizations and institutions for many years. And the disappearance of the sea ice up there is dramatic. And that's expected to have a large impact on the belugas and other animals that are very dependent or very intricately involved with the sea ice, because it's going to open up that area to a lot more shipping traffic. Now there's going to be a direct access right across essentially the Arctic, right across the North Pole, for more of the year that has never been there before. So these animals, the ecosystem is going to be exposed to greater shipping traffic, greater pollution, greater noise because of the disappearance of the sea ice. And it's also going to probably bring increasing pressure to explore for gas and oil development as well. So the idea is that we're collecting very good baseline data right now. Many of the whales get satellite tags put on them so that we can track them and see what habitats and what areas they're using, what paths they take during their migration.
How do you put those tags on them?
They're attached to the dorsal ridge of the whale. And
well, no, I mean, but how do you get them close enough to do that?
We are actually netting the whales, and we just maneuver the boats and the beluga into position and drop a net and trap the beluga in the net, and then we take them over to about thigh-high water so that the water still supports much of their weight, but we can still have access to the beluga so that we can take blood samples, we can do ultrasound, we can take swabs of the blowhole to look for microorganisms.
Can you track them? Can you put a device on them to track
yes,
where they travel?
That's exactly what we do at the very end. We put a satellite tag on them, which stays on from several months to, we've actually had some that have stayed on over a year.
What are you learning from those satellite tags? How far do they swim?
That depends on the population, which is why we need to have studies done on multiple populations, because they are using their habitat differently, and it probably in large part depends on the coming and going of the sea ice and other annual environmental changes that they're exposed to.
So we're with Tracy Spoon, who is a research scientist here at Mystic Aquarium and also at sea. She travels to the Arctic, and she's been telling us a story about how climate change is likely to affect the beluga whale population. It's a possibility. Do they have special family relationships? I mean, some animals, I don't mean to make this into a Disney story, but some animals will stay close to family and have these very intricate family relationships, and not getting separated matters to them. And what about these beluga whales? Are they like that, or are they very independent?
They certainly seem to travel in groups, but it does seem to be a much more loose relationship. So at certain times of year, these groups grow to hundreds or possibly even thousands of animals, and at other times they're a little more dispersed. But they are a highly social species, so it's very rare, at least in my experience and from what I've seen, to have solitary animals.
Well, if they're social and you encounter them or they encounter humans for the first time, is their first instinct to run? Or do they look at you and think, oh, what's with curiosity, what's this? Is that friendly nature that everybody keeps describing about them evident when you're in the wild?
Well, first of all, belugas have encountered humans for many thousands of years. There are a lot of groups who subsistence hunted them for thousands of years. So I'm not sure that there are any naive beluga groups out there, you know, anymore. But certainly what you often see is sort of a cautious or wary curiosity from them, where they will approach a boat or they'll look at you, but if you make too many sudden moves, they back off from that. So I think there is kind of a cautious curiosity on their part.
Tracy Spoon, research scientist at Mystic Aquarium and at sea. Back now to Lindsay Pollard, as promised, and the beluga whale, Niku.
So I'm going to have her do some vocalizations for you.
Okay.
And beluga whales, they do have the nickname of sea canary because they can produce such diverse vocalizations. And all of the vocals come from her blowhole. She has no vocal cords in her throat, so she cannot talk through her mouth like we can. She can only talk through that blowhole right on top of her head. Okay. And that's also where she does all of her breathing from. So I'm going to have her do some vocals for you. She can do some really low-pitched vocals. She can do a very high-pitched vocalization. And then anything in between. And she even has a really fun vocal where she'll continuously vocalize. Vocalizations that they create are used for their communication between one another, as well as for their echolocation ability.
Do you have any idea what they mean to each other?
We don't really. Yeah. There are certain ones that we hear in different contexts, so there's some that we only hear during mating season or different parts of the year, but we don't know what they all mean.
Okay.
So what I'm going to do is ask her for a spin jump. Okay. So she's going to come up in the center of the
exhibit.
This is a
spin jump.
So she's going to spin in the air and then create a nice splash.
Wow. Getting her reward.
Okay. So I'll have her show off her. These are called pectoral flippers. The pectoral flippers are on each side of their body. They have great maneuverability, as you can see, as she's waving those pecs to you.
Yeah.
She can turn around in a circle using those pectoral flippers, and she can also swim backwards. They're the only species of whales that can swim backwards because of how maneuverable those pectoral flippers are.
Flippers. That is amazing.
And then her tail at the end of her body is the most powerful part of her body. So that's what propels her through the water. She moves her tail in an up and down motion. Even though her tail is the most powerful part of their body, they're actually very slow swimmers. So their top speed's only about 10 to 12 miles per hour. African penguins here at the aquarium can actually outswim a beluga whale. Their top speed's about 40 miles per hour.
She's a lot... 40. So she's a lot
faster
than I am. For a
beluga, it's maybe 15 if they can go.
And we're with Lindsay Pollard, who's trainer of beluga whales. The Faith Middleton Show is on the road again at terrific Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut. We're having an experience on your behalf just to take you with us up close and personal. We are inches away from a beluga whale who's sitting way up. We've been touching her. Lindsay's feeding her, thanking her for her behaviors, also getting her nutrition. Small fish, large fish. She just gulps them right down. She's quite huge. She's a light gray and has that dolphin-y kind of adorable quality to her. She's just beautiful.
So I'm getting towards the end of my fish, so I'm going to just feed her the last bit of her fish in her bucket, and then I'm going to wave my hands over the bucket, and that tells her there's no more fish in the bucket. So it's up to her what she'd like to do, whether she'd want to swim around the exhibit, play with some toys, or whatever she'd like.
She's going to give her the signal. No. Oh, my God, a seagull just came and took the fish right out of her mouth. That was unbelievable. Okay.
Well, we do have unwelcome guests with the seagulls as well. So they occasionally try to take the fish. So we try to, as much as possible, eliminate that. But as you can see, sometimes it happens.
Yeah. So now you're going to give them the signal you're out of fish?
I already did. So she knows. She's just around.
She's just saying...
Typically,
she's rolling over like a little dog.
Our beluga whales, what she's looking for is some tongue rubs. So after our sessions, we usually stick around and give some tongue rubs with them.
Sure.
And that just allows for us to build our relationships with them.
Okay, you go ahead then.
So that's what she's looking for.
Okay. What an experience this has been at Mystic Aquarium.
We're going to actually walk back this way.
Okay. Bye. Lindsay Pollard, thank you so much. That
thank
was
you.
An amazing treat to get that close.
Well, thank you for coming.
To touch a beluga whale. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I'm glad you had a good time.
The Faith Middleton Show on the road at Mystic Aquarium in Mystic, Connecticut. You can visit them too. On the road, I'm Faith Middleton.
Join the conversation with us and other listeners and tell us where to bring our show on the road next. On Twitter at FaithWNPR, that's FaithWNPR, or on Facebook, just search The Faith Middleton Show.
Wrong place to drop the mic.
Let's see if he'll turn around and show you that a little bit more.
Okay. He just bit the microphone.
Oh, that's awesome.
That was amazing.
So, just a warning, when we go in there, there's a lot of background noise. There's a lot of...
We're so used to that now.
Are you guys are making candy in there? Then we'll be...
How did I not hurt myself? That's not good.
Show's latest on-the-road experience at WNPR.org. Search for Faith. Those are the sea lions interrupting my conversation.
The Faith Middleton Show is produced and edited by Jonathan McNichol and senior producer Lori Mack. Some of the show's equipment is from Sennheiser, producers of microphones and headphones for live sound, film, and video production, and used by music fans and gamers.
That's got to be the first time a penguin has chewed on the mic cord of a Sennheiser, right? Wouldn't you say? I think so.
All right, we should have a contest to give you the best sea lion sound.
I guess the final, most important question I have for you is, do I smell like fish? I think my most important question to you as a trainer is, are my jeans going to smell like fish?
No. It's a good possibility. You do go home smelling like fish, but the good thing is, it's so rewarding sometimes.
Faith Middleton Show airs at 3 and 9 p.m. on WNPR and WNPR.org, where you can find and archive all of our shows. Just type in the search word Faith, F-A-I-T-H. I'm Carl Mickelson, Exhibit Interpreter at Mystic Aquarium, and thanks for listening.
Yay! 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 Yay